exploration. And I think that's, you know, arguably the founder of evangelicalism, John Wesley of the Methodist Church, said that evangelical Christianity is a religion of the heart. So I think Abby is just, I call her Abby. She's Director Abigail Disney, but I call her Abby, and we have a great friendship. And I think Abby did just the right thing with this film in aiming for the heart rather than the head on this one. I think Lucy's story, spirituality in general, but specifically biblical spirituality, will win the day with my camp anyway, whereas statistics don't go over very well.
And Lucy Beth, we have Macbeth, we have less than a minute, but what this has meant to you, the making of this film after the loss of your son, and your efforts to try to affect the nation on gun control and gun violence?
I think it's a way of, to be able to scream to the nation, please, as a victim, I know firsthand, you know, the devastation that, you know, these kinds of crimes and gun violence are causing in the country. We have to morally and ethically really address what's happening and not see these cases and incidences as statistics and numbers. And morally, we are accountable to one another.
We're going to have to leave it there. I also want to encourage people to see our Hour with Lucy Macbeth in Sundance, the film that was made about her story, 3.5 minutes, and encourage you to see this film. It's a different Disney film, The Armor of Life, the documentary maker, The Army of Light, the documentary filmmaker Abigail Disney made it. And Reverend Shank, thanks very much for joining us
in our
studio. That does it for our show. We have a job opening at Democracy Now! It's development director. Check our website at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
It's 8:01. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for Wednesday Talk Radio with host Paul Roland.
Tune in to A Jazz World on Wednesday, October 28th from 2 to 4 p.m. to hear Jessica Laurie and her ensemble perform live. We'll be speaking with Jessica about her West Coast tour, where she is these days, and hearing live from the Jessica Laurie Ensemble. That's A Jazz World, Wednesday, October the 28th from 2 to 4 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Jessica Laurie Ensemble, live.
I'm a monster.
Be sure to be tuned in to KBOO Community Radio at 3 p.m. on Friday, October 30th for a very special edition of The Roots of Rock and Roll. After over 33 years, Steve Bricker is unfortunately stepping down as one of the show's hosts. But he's able to come down for a final show playing some of his favorite spooky tracks from the rock and roll era, and you won't want to miss it. So be sure to tune in at 3 p.m. on Friday, October 30th for this haunted farewell to Steve on the Roots of Rock and Roll.
The bushes gave a rustle, a mummy shuffled by. He was carrying the wolf man who was howling at the sky.
Into the room with your pencil in your hand. You see somebody naked and you say, who is that man? You try so hard but you don't understand just what you will say when you get home. Because something is happening here but you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones? You raise up your head and you ask, is this where it is? And somebody points to you and says, it's his. And you say, what's mine? And somebody else says, well, what is? And you say, oh my God, am I here all alone? But something is happening and you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones? You hand in your ticket and you go watch the geek who immediately walks up to you when he hears you speak and says, how does it feel to be such a freak? And you say, impossible, as he hands you a bone. Something is happening here, but you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones? You have many contacts among the lumberjacks to get you facts when someone attacks your imagination. But nobody has any respect anyway. They already expect you to all give a check to tax-deductible charity organizations. Ah, you've been with the professors and they've all liked your looks. With great lawyers you have discussed lepers and crooks. You've been through all of F. Scott Fitzgerald's books. You're very well read, it's well known. But something is happening here and you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones?
Good morning. Love that song. There's something happening. Do we know what it is, Mr. and Ms. Jones? I think there's a little bit of Mr. Jones in all of us. We're going to be talking about that and other things, the need to revolutionize ourselves. My name is Paul Rowe, and this is Wednesday Talk Radio here on KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM here in Portland. And, boy, I didn't get much sleep last night. You don't really need to know that. But, you know, I sometimes you wonder if you're ever going to learn. You know, it's like I know I can't drink black tea, like, after, like, early afternoon. I just know that. But, you know, yesterday I did, and I just didn't get much sleep. And here I am on 2 cups of black tea, you know, tail of the dog or whatever. Whatever that expression is, hair of the dog. And so here I am talking at you, hopefully talking with you. I'd really like to engage people in, every once in a while, I usually have a guest and sometimes I don't. And as you know, if you've been listening to this show much at all over the past couple years, you know, I do like to just sort of have more extended conversations about some themes that I think show a certain amount of continuity. You know, I try to talk about the intersection of the outer and the inner, the intersectionality, I guess is a word, of many different vectors of force and identities and classes and other things that impact us, and, you know, what's going on inside us. Psychology, if you will, the psychopathology of this system that we are all enmeshed in and trapped in, and the need to deal with that at all these different levels. But before we go into all that and discuss these things at greater depth with you, dear listener, at 503-231-8187, that's the number, I've got a bunch of announcements. Lots of things going on, as usual, in this buzzing town, this expanding, growing metropolis of Portland here. There's a city council hearing this afternoon on affordable housing. City Hall's at 1221 Southwest 4th Avenue. If you didn't know, get to know your local city government. 1:30 p.m., city commissioners plan to present a resolution for an increase of $66.7 million for affordable housing across Portland's, quote, urban renewal areas, increasing the affordable housing set aside from the current 30 to 40%. Nothing's been voted on yet, so you are asked to come out and show your support by affordable housing activists. And you're also encouraged to wear red to be seen and heard. So that's at 1:30 p.m. today at City Hall, 1221 Southwest 4th. City Council hearing on affordable housing. Tomorrow evening, the International Leonard Peltier Defense Committee presents Decolonization and Political Prisoners. That is at Portland State University Native American Community Center. The event is free and open to the public and disability affirmative. Join them for an evening of thoughtful discussion focusing on U.S.-held political prisoners, gaining their amnesty, solidarity with Assata Shakur, and decolonizing the prison industrial complex. Present will be Chauncey Peltier, son of Leonard Peltier, and co-director of International Leonard Peltier Defense Committee. Kent Ford, founder of Portland Black Panther Party and father of Patrice Lumumba Ford, who is imprisoned. Ajamu Umi of the All-African People's Revolutionary Party Portland chapter. And there will be special prints of Leonard Peltier's artwork will be there. So that's a... tomorrow evening at Portland State University. Gosh, I didn't get a time there. I assume it's 7, but they've got a Facebook page. You can check that out. Or call in if you have that information. Friday from 3:30 to 8:30 p.m. at Augustana Lutheran Church, 2710 Northeast 14th Avenue, is a renters' rights community hearing. Free and open to the public. It's the October annual membership meeting as well. That's 5 p.m. That's the membership meeting, I guess, is at 3:30. Anyways, from 3:30 to 5:30. And then afterwards, there's a renter rights workshop, a dinner, and a meeting. I'm not sure in what order all that is, but you can go and check it out. There's a renter education, call to membership, board of director elections, special focus, renter state of emergency, child care, and Spanish interpretation provided. That's at Augustana Lutheran Church, 2710 Northeast 14th Avenue. That's this Friday from 3:30 to 8:30 p.m. Saturday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., Tom McCall Waterfront Park. It's a unity, a workers' unity rally, labor and community groups rally against the frightening attack on all workers, anti-worker legislation, skyrocketing rent, unlivable wages, and the scapegoating of immigrants are all scary issues facing working people. There'll be music, games, costume contests, skits, trick-or-treating, and more. Come learn how we as a community can overcome these threats to our families, our children's futures, endorsed by Working Families Party, 350 PDX, 15 Now PDX, United Association of Plumbers, many, many others in this growing coalition of people fighting on many different fronts for housing, economic, and environmental justice. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Tom McCall Waterfront Park, just south of the Hawthorne Bridge. Next Wednesday, November 4th at 2:15 p.m., the City of Portland is slated to do something big. The Portland City Council will consider a resolution to protect our region from dangerous and dirty oil trains rolling through our region. Here's how you can be part of this critical moment. Attend the Portland City Council meeting on November 4th. That's a week from today at 2:15. Testify or just stand in support of the resolution to oppose dangerous oil trains. Show your support to Portland City Council by submitting a comment today. We need thousands of comments to ensure big oil doesn't derail efforts to protect our region from risky oil trains and terminals. The link to comment, http://... I will put that up on our page. There's also an event page for this. I'll put all these links on a Wednesday Talk Radio program page. Big Oil wants to expand shipments of explosive crude oil trains down the Columbia River and threaten every Columbia River community along the rail lines. So that's a sign up for public testimony starts at 1:30 next Wednesday. Portland City Hall, of course, 1221 Southwest 4th Avenue. And that all is in the context of something which got extended a good treatment in the last Wednesday's Mercury. A growing number of cities across, this is called fueling policy. Portland's finally deciding whether to clamp down on oil train transport. But there's also a bigger issue of their policy on, I guess I could say our, since it is our city government. You know, try not to be too alienated. In June, Portland City Council approved the 2015 Climate Action Plan, which directs the city to establish an export policy. Now officials are looking at several possibilities while local environmental activists are pushing for rules to keep all carbon-spewing fuels from Portland's roads, rails, and waterways. An election year where Mayor Charlie Hales is feeling mounting pressure to take a strong stand on climate action. Of course, now we know that he's not running for re-election to do a good job as mayor. So maybe this is what he's focusing his energy on, and you can encourage him in that direction. Who knows? Maybe, you know, he went to meet with the Pope. He changed his position on the Pembina propane terminal. They passed this climate change. Maybe, you know, he's ready to do something really big, like some other things that have happened in the world. A few bright lights where countries and municipalities and the youth public trust lawsuit on climate change, various other things are, you know, trying to push the global debate that is leading up to the talks in Paris coming up in December, where a number of Portlanders are going to be in a tens of thousands, if not more, people from around the world going to be there. You know, some people call it our last best chance at actually going through the public policy route. So anyway, Hales has directed the Portland Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to develop options to guide City Council toward a tenable fossil fuel policy. He's also tasked the Bureau with convening an advisory council of local stakeholders to help. The advisory commission includes representatives from environmental groups, government bureaus, tribes, unions, and business alliances. The group met twice on October 1st and 15th, so this is all very recent, to discuss public policy recommendations. It's looking at two options. One, opposing coal, oil, and petroleum infrastructure expansion with limited support of, quote, cleaner fuels, such as natural gas. Of course, that's an issue we've talked about extensively here on KBOO. The idea that fracked gas, most of, quote, natural gas is fracked, not all of it, but certainly I think almost all of it in the West, in the Colorado, Wyoming, et cetera, area is fracked, is certainly not cleaner because the massive amount of methane that leaks into the atmosphere in the process. Anyway, that's one option, is opposing all such infrastructure expansion, or two, a stronger policy that opposes expanding infrastructure and transport of all types of fossil fuels. So you can weigh in on this. They're drafting this now as we speak. You can contact Mayor Hales. You can contact the Planning and Sustainability Bureau. You can contact your city commissioners. You don't need me to get you that contact information. I'm sure you can find it yourself. and weigh in on this. Go to this, again, excellent article by Shelby King, Fueling Policy, in last Wednesday's Portland Mercury, which has been doing a fair amount of decent reporting on these issues. So that's that. And here we are. It's just about 8:20. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. My name is Paul Roland, and we're talking about what is really going on. And, you know, I try to kind of go back and forth to some extent between very specific issues, single issues like the liquefied natural gas export terminals proposed for Coos Bay and Warrenton, like the Pembina export terminal that I covered and KBOO covered, like the coal and oil trains, like the Nestle proposed water bottling plant in the gorge, which, by the way, as an addendum, the it got approved. The petition for they got approved to start collecting signatures to get the ballot initiative to ban all commercial water bottling in Hood River County, apparently by threat of a lawsuit when they first denied it. I forget which body, which county body is tasked with doing that, but they did go ahead and approve that. So they're able to start collecting, I think they need 2,000 signatures to get that on the ballot for next year. So hooray, Local Water Alliance and other groups that have been fighting that. We can talk about that. We can talk about individual issues. But as I said, I also like to alternate with, you know, deeper reflections on what is really going on, Mr. and Ms. Jones. And do we really know what's going on? You know, I haven't really got into this issue as much as I'd like. You know, it's my strong opinion that we don't have really a well-developed common understanding of what's really facing us. You know, we call it capitalism. We call it goes, it's a beast of many names. But, you know, there's also some people who talk about civilization itself being the problem. There's various different approaches. And, you know, some people think, oh, it doesn't really matter as long as we're fighting the same battles. But, you know, I think it really does matter at a certain point because the approach you take really does depend on your understanding of what's really in front of us. So, you know, that's something we can talk about. I mentioned the need to revolutionize ourselves because, you know, really our psychology itself is constrained. You know, it's like we ourselves are, you know, reflecting the degree to which we have been inculcated with the values and structured ways of relating in this world. And it's very difficult to break free, especially, you know, we're all kind of isolated. We tend to just sort of go along to get along or get along to go along, you know, sort of be nice. We don't tend to necessarily challenge each other in a way that's strengthens us and helps us grow as individuals. Sometimes we kind of are walking on eggshells, you know, we don't want to be, you know, threaten other people because we don't want to be threatened ourselves. You know, we don't want to rock the boat. All these things that we don't like to think are really part of what's happening, but I think we need to confront it. So, number here is 503-231-8187. I've opened up a whole bunch of things. My mind is just starting to clear here with a couple of cups of tea after I only got about 3 or 4 hours of sleep last night. But we persevere. There's a really interesting article I came across that was sent out by a local activist, No, You Can't Be the Change Alone, by Alessandra Pigni, written 31st July 2015. Having traveled between world out there humanitarianism and world in here Western psychology and meditation for a decade, I often see a clash between personal and structural transformation or the lack thereof. I hang out with the action people, those who get stuff done to change the system, and snark at personal transformation, and I sense that doing is not enough. I sit with the reflective people, those who believe that we can change the world by changing ourselves, and I definitely know that something is missing. Being is not enough. The communication between the two seems limited, superficial, and when it happens, it's just a bit hippie-ish in style. An interesting quandary. I can't be the change alone, no matter how many times I quote Mahatma Gandhi. Neither do apolitical humanitarianism or political activism without personal change standing chance of transforming the world. So, to be or to do. And it goes on for a few pages. I would encourage this. It's called No, You Can't, Quote, Be the Change Alone. And it looks like we've got a couple callers. So instead of hearing my voice, let's go to one of them. Derek, you're on the air.
Good morning. I guess it's hard to know where to start on this, as you're clearly struggling with, too. So many intersecting issues of capitalism and environmental destruction and, you know, moral decay. I don't know. Can we say that? But I guess what occurred to me, though, was the idea of this idea of civilization. And, you know, is civilization a problem? Well, we may need to redefine civilization. You know, right now we think of civilization as roads and cars. If we like get back to civilization, that means getting back to, you know, the city with the roads and the cars. And I think that we need to think about civilization as emotional security and safety and peaceful state of mind. You know, like that's, I think those are like the ultimate goals of most humans when they think about it. Most of the people who are amassing wealth, you know, are doing it, you know, to make themselves happy or, you know, to secure their future for their children. And of course, you know, they're destroying the futures of others in the process. So I think though that rethinking the way we, you know, what we consider to be civilization will allow us to keep civilization and save the earth at the same time.
Well, I mean, I guess some people, you know, again, this is an issue that I've kind of steered away from a little bit. It's because it's a very difficult issue to really get into in depth in an hour. But, I mean, some people would say that the root of the word civilization and the what civilization is actually is, you know, civitas, which is, you know, the city. So, in a way, you're...
Well, I'm not... The city's going nowhere, you know, like the cities are here. Half the world's population, you know, lives in cities. But there's a new book that just came out called The Permaculture City, you know, which addresses, you know, how can we continue to live in cities, which was obviously going to happen. And cities are wonderful, you know, cultural places and sources of innovation and education and all kinds of great stuff about cities. But there are, you know, ways we can reconfigure our mindset and our transportation, you know, and our supply chains and so on, you know, to make the cities, you know, something that our world can actually survive, you know, and make them look, you know, even make them look less like a gray cancer spreading across the planet. You know, if you look at Google Earth, you know, and you zoom out, all the cities are gray. You know, they're surrounded by, you know, the green vegetable fields. But the cities themselves are gray and spreading and metastasizing, you know, and connecting with each other. And they look kind of like, a cancer. But, you know, if you put enough trees in them and, you know, you get a little bit of integrated food production and everybody, if we depave half the place, you know, half of our city space is roads. In L.A. it's 55%. Maybe here it's only 45%, you know, but roads and parking lots and airports and, you know, paved surfaces is like half of the total surface of the city. And that's just, you know, not happy from really anyone.
Right. Well, okay. So, I mean, I think there's several things going on that we have to kind of parse out, you know. It's like, yeah. One, what are the origins of it all? So, I mean, that's in a way, kind of a separate question. So if the origins of it are in the origins of cities somehow, like the centralized, you know, centralized power, control, infrastructure, distribution, you know, power, command and power structures based upon, you know, this, you know, originally the king, you know, and the sort of the pyramidal power structure, which was sort of the origins of the city based upon, you know, resting control of nature through, you know, agriculture and domestication, all that. I mean, that's sort of a, that's the origins of it. Now, that's a separate question, I guess, from how you deal with it.
Well, I mean, that's the super early origin of it. You know, you're talking about the origin, you know, 3 or 2 or 1,000 years ago, depending upon what part of the world you're in.
Well, super early, it depends on what your context of time is. In the context of, like, our species, it's very, very little, but, yeah.
Well, yeah, okay, so cities are new. Let's see here. Okay, let me point out one thing, because I'm always amused when I drive around Portland and I cross in various parts of the city, you know, decaying streets that reveal old streetcar tracks. You know, there are streetcar tracks in this city that are 60 years old that were paved over when GM and others bought up the streetcar companies and put them out of business on purpose. You know, and then that required everyone to buy cars, which required us to pave, you know, a lot more of the city. And so, you know, you can go, I don't know, there's like philosophical ancient origins, I guess, that you're talking about. But there's also, you know, relatively recent things that have caused cities to grow in the unhelpful way that they
have.
Well,
sure, there's plateaus, you know, there's phases, you know, of expansionism. And, you know, you can look at human history in terms of like a number of sort of semi-discrete phases of sort of these revolutions or whatever, you know, from like the original industrial revolution, which was like advanced flint making several thousand years ago, which led to, you know, the greater ability to hunt efficiently, which kind of led to certain things. And then, you know, you can talk about the origins of, you know, settling down in cities. Then you can talk about the origins of empires. Then you can talk about the origin, you know, there's several, you know, it goes in these, it's not like this smooth process, but, you know, you look at the origins of the control, you know, there is a control system, which has gotten more and more refined. And we're basically at this super advanced stage of it. So, you know, sure, of course, then there are better ways of living in cities than others. But I guess the fundamental question is it actually possible to go on as we're going on? And what is actually necessary to actually change what's going on? And, you know, whether or not a permacultural city is actually possible, that's an interesting discussion. But I guess I was getting at something, what I consider, you know, a little more profound, I think, which is what actually is driving this process? What is it that's actually driving this process? That's kind of the question I want to get at, because I think we shy away from that. You know, some people like capitalism is sort of this mechanical thing. You know, what is this capitalism? You know, so then even people who talk about civilization, like, what is this civilization? What is at the heart of it? What's the driving force of this thing? I think we really need to get at that.
Well, I don't know if you're going to human greed or if you're just, you know, want to understand capitalism better. I don't know. I think I'll let somebody else talk about it.
All right, then. Thanks for calling. It's good to engage with you. And
have a good one.
All right. So, yeah, I mean, the issue of human greed, even that, I think, is something of a mystification. I still don't think that really, what, you know, human greed, what does that really mean? What does human greed mean? I mean, we're, you know, people seemingly, then were humans must have always been greedy. Why did human greed get the room to express itself in such excessive and dramatic fashion? You know, what was it that caused that? I mean, these are like difficult questions, but I think we need to talk about them. So let's go to our next caller. Deanna, you're on the air.
Good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
Thank you for having this discussion, which is quite ambitious of you, I think. I don't mean because it's you. Just it's a discussion that can go anywhere. I don't have anything figured out. I'll be the first to say that. However, yesterday I had this, I don't know, it was like something that just came to me when I was listening to somebody on KBOO, and I thought, who can I share this thought with? This will be such an unpopular thought, no one will want to hear it. So here's what came to me of a whole piece, that we are a subjugated people who believe we are free. And I can't elaborate greatly on that, but it has something to do with the outside and the inside. And I think it was an answer to me that I'm working on as to why we, particularly in this country, in my opinion, don't seem to be willing to come out of a certain amount of denial, to be willing to explore deeply what is going on. It's pretty hard to stand back from who we are and look at who we are and ask that question. But one of the things that's kind of come up for me recently is that through all of the discussions and movements that have been really getting some attention recently, even though they've been going on for probably a lot longer than I know, among people in indigenous communities, the environmental movement, so-called, I sense a burgeoning awareness on the part of a certain percentage of the population that what my statement is somewhat true, and that people are coming awake to an awareness about that. And it's pretty difficult to grapple with the outer manifestations of all of that at the same time as we look inwards towards our own individual, if you will, psychology, which is not so individual in the sense that I think it is something that infects everybody to a greater or a lesser degree. But going back to what I started to say, that people are coming awake, that people are banding together in the kinds of ways that we understand around issues of liberation, and now the intersectionality of liberation of specific groups of people, et cetera, et cetera. And that the problem has to do with not understanding that we have been conditioned to be who we are through this long process that some will call civilization, but I think it's quite the opposite of civilization. Anyway, I've said more than enough. If you can talk to that off the air, that would be great. Thanks.
I wouldn't mind engaging you further.
Okay.
I mean, these are all very difficult things. I think that idea that we are conditioned is a very difficult thing. You know, I think, you know, there's one thing I like to think about, you know, it's like those of us who consider ourselves activists or critics or social change agents or whatever, we tend, you know, we implicitly or explicitly are constantly calling other people out, other individuals, institutions, people in roles for being wrong, basically. You know, it's like, obviously, it's like if we go against Exxon or go against Shell, we're saying that they are wrong in what they're doing. Mm-hmm. But if we do that to other people, you know, we have to be honest and consistent and coherent. We have to be open to the possibility that we are wrong about things ourselves. And, you know, without like making it this moral judgment. But I think that's very difficult because I think it's really difficult to attain the place where you feel, where we feel, one feels, one has a coherent, you know, frame, a way of understanding the world such that we can actually make judgments about it, because it's so big. Mm-hmm. And it's like so, you know, it's difficult to come to that place. You know, we might, you know, people tend to like, you know, go along with like what, you know, their church or their parents or whatever. It's difficult to come upon a sort of an independent critical perspective. And then we kind of guard that sort of fiercely. It's like we kind of own that and we sort of are protective of it. And so when people challenge us, we get kind of defensive, just like other people get defensive, you know, the corporations or whatever. And I'm not equating, you know, us, but I think that's a dynamic that we really have to guard out for, because I think we do need to be open to the possibility that, because, you know, none of us have it all figured out.
Mm-hmm. Well, just the other day, you're talking about challenging ourselves. I, to my embarrassment, I discovered how angry I was about people, and I include myself in this, absolutely, who get together and talk with all the people with whom they ostensibly agree and will not open discussion to those who present any other view. And I didn't mean to have an angry discussion, I mean, statement towards people, but I really did. I said, that's one of the things that's really wrong with us, you know, is if you're not willing to entertain another point of view, then, you know, what you're calling it conversation, I'm calling it masturbation. And they were horrified, first of all, at the use of that word, I'm sure. And I was horrified that I was so angry. But I really thought, I'm talking to myself as much as I'm talking to these other folks.
Right, right.
And so that's the kind of exploration that is unsettling, unnerving, and it's the kind of exploration that I've been trying to do. I'm one of the people that's caught between being a meditator and an activist. I don't think those two are mutually exclusive at all, but they certainly provide a great deal of grist for the mill, shall I say. So,
all right. Well, thanks, Deanna. We do have another caller.
Yeah, good.
I appreciate that. And it would be good, you know, to have 10, 15, 20 minutes with each caller. But sort of to be fair.
Yes.
Maybe someday we'll have a 5-hour round table here and we can really get into stuff. But thanks for calling.
Great. Sure. Thank you.
All right. And the number is 503-231-8187. And we got James on the line.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I kind of like what the last caller was talking about being conditioned. And I think to an extent that I believe that that's true, because we're conditioned, you know, we're told that we have a choice, but we have to, you know, but it can only be the choices within the parameters that we're given. You know, so if we try to choose something that doesn't exist with the choices that we're presented with, you know, people get, you know, it makes people uncomfortable, because we there's kind of this cognitive dissonance. It's kind of like if you talk about, like, well, you know, in the election, you know, there's Democrats and Republicans. If I try to bring up, like, Jill Stein to any of my Democratic friends, for the most part, they're like, well, that's just not going to happen.
And, of course, there are those who would say that she's also, you know, part – falling into the electoral process game as well. And then you get into, you know, all these associated questions, you know, what will it take to actually do the kind of transformation that a lot of us are looking for? Like that's the question I keep coming back to, is what is actually necessary to transform things, sort of kind of working backwards. We sort of work at this incremental thing. We kind of keep doing the things that we're doing, and then think somehow that cumulatively they're going to reach, but sometimes they just sort of become their own sort of self-contained path, and they don't necessarily get to that transformatory place, you know, that sort of insurrectionary, you know, complete transformation that many of us, or maybe then there's a lot of us don't necessarily want that. So there's this, you know, conflict between those of us who, it's all very complicated. It's true.
Yeah, no, I think that a lot of that stems from our beginnings in our country, and realizing that we're just our country in very many respects is just an offshoot of British colonialism, and British colonialism is the it's a slice of imperialism, but it's the idea that, you know, a certain people are just better by design than other people, and we've kind of adopted. I mean, we've kind of adopted it. We've been kind of conditioned to adopt it as more of a national lingo, even though it definitely applies more to the white European lingo. But that somehow, even though we rank as some of the lowest in the world as far as how we perform, but that we're not really that great of a country. But then you also look at it on the side that, you know, a lot of the agenda that pushes what we have now is also decreed by organized religion. You know, the papal ruling that says that discovered countries don't belong to the people who inhabit them. They don't have any claim but to the Christian discoverers. So we kind of have that piece where organized religion has really conditioned us as well, even though a lot of Christians have the mantra that, you know, love one another and, you know, love your neighbor, you know, love your enemies. But really, you know, it was more of a vehicle for bringing people together, not for positive reasons, but for, you know, colonial reasons. I see a lot of, I don't know, it's even as I'm talking, it's kind of like expanding. But
well, let's get, I mean, that the whole, I mean, the way I look at things is that there is, again, it's like, what is that imperial process? What is that colonial process? Because, you know, I think there's a pretty good argument to be made that the figure of Jesus Christ and the movement, you know, initial movement inspired was actually was in some sense, you know, I mean, one that really has to get deep into it to really parse all this out, was a challenge to the empire. I mean, you know, there's some pretty good indications in the words of that, you know, quoted by Jesus Christ and, you know, some of his followers, that there's sort of this sort of, you know, brotherhood and, you know, inclusive of women seemingly way more than the society, the very misogynistic society of the time. But again, these are all really complicated particular points. But so how did the empire take that over and get to the point where, you know, Jesus was used as this sort of rationale for conquering other cultures? That's a very bizarre twist. So that kind of recuperation or co-optation, you know, dynamic, which is essential part of the imperial colonial dynamic, which continually gathers people back into its fold and inverts any impulses of resistance and brings them back in and twists them to its aims. So what is the question I'm posing.
Well, the thing that I look at when I see it is it's two parts. It's the there's the non-resistance where, you know, they take the mantra of turn the other cheek, but they don't really use it. They use it as a way, you know, where, you know, you want to turn your other cheek when your enemies strike you. You know, they use the idea that, you know, the meek shall inherit the earth. And so they kind of have this mantra that you know, if you want to be a good Christian, then you got to stand aside. You know, there's this whole, I was reading this thing about the difference between pacifism and non-resistance. And that pacifism, according to some of the more traditional sects, is that pacifism is a form of violence because you're not standing aside. You're using your body as a barrier or as a violent action for standing up, whereas non-resistance is just simply sitting back and praying that, you know, we're somehow going to pray this all away.
Right.
And that you know, the other part of it, too, is that, you know, I think another way that it was twisted and taken up is that, you know, Jesus talked about bringing a physical kingdom of heaven to the earth. And so, you know, when the Romans, after baptizing the army and joining church and state, they created a mantra of, you know, well, you know, somehow they felt that they were charged with this task. So, I mean, I don't know exactly how that works, but I know that part of it is seeing that, you know, a lot of the gospel has been rewritten to give more sympathy to the Romans, you know, the fact that Pontius Pilate.
Right. So I'm trying to focus the conversation again on, so what is that force that rewrites? What is that force that manipulates? I think that's what we're confronting. We're basically, you know, whether it's, you call it unilateralism or, you know, American exceptionalism, it's like, you know, the general that sends the troops out to die and is not subject, as opposed to, say, you know, whether or not one agrees with this form of acting in the world, you know, whether, you know, like an indigenous tribal, you know, war chief, you know, warfare was very, very different, you know, that was led, you know, and even, you know, even in warfare up until more recent times where they led their troops into battle, it's, you know, what is this force that creates this sort of insulated class of, you know, usually it's, you know, people, we call it the patriarchy, you know, whether it's the double standard, you know, that the rules do not apply to those who make the rules or manipulate the rules, you know, plausible deniability of the CIA. These are all these same class of dynamics, which has basically created this set in motion, this process is what I'm basically asserting. So like rather than getting caught up in all the individual cases of it, I want to look at what is it? Because I think we really need to face up to that. Because ultimately, you know, I think it's good to work at the policy level of the Portland City Council. I think it's good to pass, initiatives to ban commercial water bottling. I think all these are good, but we need to get at these deeper issues of what is it that drives this process, this expansionist, imperial, colonial, whatever you want to call it, dynamic. Because I think that's what we need to confront directly.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's attacking the symptoms, but not attacking the sickness itself.
But we do have another caller. And so thank you, James, for engaging with us this morning. And the number to call is 503-231-8187. And I want to mention that coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Political Perspectives, host Doug McVeigh speaks with drug policy expert Sanho Tree about the Drug Czar's Office and National Drug Policy. That's at 9 o'clock on Political Perspectives here on KBOO Community Radio. And thank everybody who's listening for listening. And thank you members for your support for KBOO Radio. And if you who are listening are not actually a member, you can easily remedy that. You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. You are listening to Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Paul Rowland. I'm all alone in the studio this morning talking about some really, I don't know what you think about it, but I think they're challenging and difficult questions, and I think we need to challenge each other more as we are coming together more in this city to fight for a decent living wage, to fight the insane rental and housing price increases, to stop this spiraling out of control climate change, which if you see what's going on in Indonesia with the peat fires burning, if you see what's going on with the warming of the permafrost in the tundra areas, if you read Climate News Network or Robert Scribler and other sources, Robert Hunsaker, who I've had on the air here, the people who are really grappling with the realities of climate change. What I'm talking about is, you know, that those are, I see climate change and all these things as just symptoms of a much deeper process. And I do believe we have to get at that. But we do have some callers. Let's go. Mike, you're on the air.
Hi, Paul. I apologize. I'm somewhat of a slow speaker, and I'm going to try and get to it fast because these questions are so deep. And I'm going to, I'm listening to your question, you're kind of asking a specific question, which is extremely complex. There's no easy answer. And I was trying, I thought I had an answer. And then you basically, it's just part of more questions. But I also wanted to offer a little bit of hope because I try to be, you know, I couldn't live my day without, if I wasn't, you know, I try to find positivity in everything. So that the question about this force of imperialism, it's not all cultures are like that, and I won't say that it's simply European Christian culture that goes in this direction with that just eats up the environment and enslaves people. I know that there's probably other cultures that in Asia and that are also guilty, but there's, if you look in history, there's a lot of great cultures that seemed to have better values than we do. And
can I just as a quick parenthesis, I think it's a tendency in our species, and I think there's some cultures that have developed mechanisms or modalities to keep that tendency in check better than others.
Okay. So what we have specifically in our country is a culture where if you are anything other than white male and Christian, you have a handicap against you, and in order to achieve any sort of success with any reliability that you're going to get, take care of your family and have a decent retirement, you have to adopt the white male culture.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's only a few slots for you to begin with. And that's what we have to defeat. And so the second part is about intelligence, about the expansion of human intelligence. And I think Carl Sagan talked about it at great length. And he said that we're at the adolescence of humankind, and if we can survive it, then if we can survive the adolescence, then we can maybe go on to, well, he talked a lot about propagating, you know, getting out into space.
I actually disagree with that. I think we matured tens of thousands of years ago. We reached basically the point that we are still at. I think it's something else going on.
Well, now in Cosmos, he's devoted an episode largely to life intelligence. And he started at the very basic single-celled organisms, moved up to, you know, multi-cells and plants, and then animals, and then DNA, and then the brain, which is just multiple. It's basically like a computer, is just the more connections you have. And then he, this was like, you know, 1980, and he had the internet, and he was in a library. He spoke about the printing press as being the evolution of the brain to where we can communicate on, you know, over time now.
Well, we only have a couple minutes left, and you've opened up whole other arenas.
Well,
discussion.
So let me conclude then. Okay, so he spoke about the internet, and that's what we have, and the internet has come to full force now. But what we need, I think that the way to attack this problem, and I'm not revolutionary by saying it, is that we need to support those other cultures and education, you know, and the intelligence of those cultures, that not, they shouldn't be forced to adopt our culture. We need the intelligence of the world's cultures to work together to come up with solutions to the great problems.
Okay. Well, that, as I said, opened up a whole bunch of stuff, which would take another several hours to fully parse out. But thank you for calling so much. It's really great to engage with people and get people's, within the extreme limits of this particular form of hour-long talk radio, which we must always take into consideration. And I apologize to the other callers who I couldn't get to. And it looks like we're going to have to carry on. Emily did call in to answer my question, saying the source of greed is the fear of death or lack of not having and the fear of change. Well, that I actually agree a lot with that. But to parse that out, again, would take at least another hour. So I thank you, Emily. I wish I could have engaged with you, because that actually is really right along the lines of sort of the way I've been thinking about things and sort of the origins, the fear of death, the first patriarchs who couldn't, accept their own death, so they inflict death on others. But gosh, we've run out of time. We only have 30 seconds left. So thank you all for calling. Thank you all for listening. Thank you all for paying attention. Please do get involved in the things I mentioned at the beginning of the show. I will go to the computer, I promise, and look them up. Or you can call me at the front desk. I go on front desk duty right now, 503-231-8032. Thank you so much for listening. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Halloween Community Rally and the Spirit of Unity on Saturday, October 31st at Waterfront Park in Portland. In the Spirit of Unity will be a family-friendly rally to raise the minimum wage, defend workers' rights, demand renters' rights, and support immigrants' rights. There will be trick-or-treating, costume contests, games, prizes, and music by Portland hip-hop artists. Again, that's In the Spirit of Unity, a Halloween community rally on Saturday, October 31st from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Waterfront Park, just south of the Hawthorne Bridge in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. The time is 9:01, and here's what we have coming up for you this morning on KBOO.